It's Ant-Man here, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show about to hit the airwaves. And we've got a special guest in Quentin Van Abbey, who's from the president of the Croydon Walking Club. So we've got a bit of a chat happening with him, and we're looking forward to that. So we should just get into our show sponsor, a bit of Born to be Wild, and then we'll be back to chat to Quentin about all things bushwalking. And we're off.
ARB 4x4 Accessories is a proud sponsor of Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show and a station sponsor. Whether it be frontal protection, a draw system to increase storage, or a recovery kit to ensure you don't get stuck in the bush without a way out, head to ARB today to ensure you're ready for whatever our harsh Aussie terrain will throw your way. Visit arb.com.au to explore the products that are right for you, or find your closest ARB store or stockist. Valley FM is hosting a trivia night. Join us for a night of trivia, laughs and fun at the Mount Evelyn RSL at 49 Birmingham Road, Mount Evelyn on Saturday the 27th of October from 7 p.m. $20 per person with up to 10 people per table. BYO drinks and nibbles with complimentary tea and coffee provided. All proceeds from the evening going directly to the station. For inquiries or bookings, call Rob on 0419 647 555 or email greg@yarravalleyfm.com.
And that should be a bit of a fun night. This is Ant-Man, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show, and I've got Quentin Van Abbey in the studio. Welcome, Quentin.
Hi, Anthony.
Thanks for coming in. You're the president of the Croydon Walking Club.
That's right.
Yes. And I put my foot in it, and the first thing I said was, is it a bushwalking club? And it's not. And you said, no, we cater for all kinds of walking.
That's right. Yes, yeah. Indeed.
So we're going to talk about that in more detail soon. But look, let's start with my usual question when I've got a guest in the studio for the first time. Who is Quentin?
Yes, well, maybe to explain who I am, I need to explain a little bit about where I came from. Namely, a little bit about my parents. They met during the Second World War. Father had been defending Iceland from the invading German hordes, and was seconded to MI6, British Counterintelligence in London, where he, during the course of his duties, he met my mother, who was a cipher clerk, and had spent some time at Bletchley Park, where they cracked the Enigma codes.
That was the one that was in the underground.
That's right.
Yeah, seem to remember reading something about that or something.
Well, it was a very good film made. Well, several films made about it. One recently with, I think it was Eddie Redmayne in the role of Alan Turing, who was one of the leading people at Bletchley Park. Now, if you ask me what they did, I can't tell you. To my regret, I never found out.
Well, they probably weren't allowed to tell you
that.
They
probably
anyway.
Weren't. They were probably under secrecy laws of some sort. Anyway, at the end of the war, they married, and I was subsequently the outcome of that. And at the end of the war, they decided that they were looking for a better life, and so came out to Australia. We started in Hobart at the university there, lived halfway up Mount Wellington in half a house, so I understand. Yep. After a couple of years, we moved to Melbourne, and Father worked at the university there and for a couple of years. And then in 1953, we moved to Adelaide, which is where I spent most of my growing up time. And my father was the head of the German department at the University of Adelaide. Now, to understand a little bit more about where I came from, you should know that my father was a grade A student and took his degree and PhD from Cambridge University in modern languages with an emphasis on German, while my mother took a degree from Oxford University in classical Greek and archaeology. Right. So now maybe I was doomed to be somewhat academic.
Yeah, well, it sort of suits the bill. I think, interesting, you talk about your mother getting her degree from Oxford. It's unusual because back in the day, women weren't often classed as academics, because I know my partner's grandmother was one of the first ladies to also get a degree from Oxford.
Well, that's quite right. In fact, my mother's mother was also one of the first women to get an officially recognised degree from Oxford, and that was very unusual in those days.
That's interesting. I can't tell you all the details because I don't know her family tree to the nth degree. That's interesting. So you're born to be an academic.
Absolutely. Well, sort of, I think, yes. Anyway, we ended up in Adelaide, and of course I went to school there, and in 1960 we went back to the UK on sabbatical leave from the university. And at that time, for various reasons, my father decided to stay in England. So they sold up in Australia and we stayed in England. This didn't really suit me terribly well. I wasn't too happy about that because, of course, I'd got all my friends in Australia, grown up mostly in Australia, and I was determined to come back here. But at that time, I was too young to do anything, of course. I had finished school in Australia. I'd actually had a scholarship to Adelaide University, which I never got to take up, but they wouldn't let me go to the university because I was only 15, so which was probably, in retrospect, a very good thing. Anyway, I did 2 years of school at in England and was lucky enough to get a small scholarship to Cambridge, which I went to do my degree, which I spent 3 years studying mathematics and a fourth year studying a diploma in computer science, long before there were such things as computer science degrees in universities. The best thing about the fourth year was that I met my wife. And somewhat to my surprise, when I said, well, I'm going back to Australia, would you like to come? She said yes.
Right.
So this meant I had to contact my future employer and say, well, would you mind sponsoring both of us to Australia rather than just me? And they fortunately said yes. Mm-hmm. So at the end of 1967, the beginning of 68, we came over as 10-pound Poms and finished in Newcastle, where I joined BHP. And I was working as a computer in the computer systems division there. And then after about 4 years, after our son had been born, my wife took him to England to visit the grandparents. And while she was away, and of course she knew all about this, I was applying for a new job somewhere. I actually got offered two jobs, one in Townsville and one in Melbourne. And I must say, I've always said that had I been single, I probably would have taken the Townsville job because it would have been interesting.
Yes.
However, I knew my wife would make a quick trip to the divorce court if I took it for her because she didn't like Newcastle's weather.
Right.
And
Townsville would have been a lot worse.
Yes, Townsville would have been worse, but she was quite happy to come to Melbourne. So we moved to Melbourne in 71, and shortly after we got here, our daughter was born, and I joined RMIT in the systems area there, where I worked for the entire time I was employed in Melbourne.
Okay. That's so a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, nearly 30 years. Mm. I was, for most of the time, essentially deputy IT manager at RMIT.
Mm. Okay, excellent. It's a whole different world. Like you would have seen the progression of computers from these big, massive, clunky things operated by typewriter keyboards right through to what we have in present day.
That's right.
Just that journey alone would have been amazingly scary.
Look, it was an exciting time. It really was. Mm. I enjoyed the first 25 years or so that I was there immensely. And I believe that we did lots of good things. Obviously, our emphasis was on providing services to the academic area and the administrative area. RMIT changed vastly in the time I was there because the academic computing was hived off into a separate area. Library computing was hived off into a separate area. Mm-hmm. Most of the departments started to get their own mini computer systems and desktops and things like that as mm-hmm. the years passed.
Yep.
But there was still a role for the centralised computing facilities, and also the functions that we included were things like running the communications, which mm-hmm. included things like the telephone system and general communications networks around the university and its various campuses, because, mm-hmm. of course, during the great university amalgamation, RMIT acquired extra campuses, and so we had to look after them as well as the yeah. central city campus.
Okay. So, in other words, the reason you got into bushwalk, or let's say walking, was because you needed to clear your head from being involved in the academic field.
Well, I think I'd probably blame my wife for this largely, because I met her in Cambridge at the Cambridge University Rambling Club, which is a walking club, mm-hmm. one of the walking clubs at the university there. That's where we met. But we didn't do any walking in the early years when we got out here. I'm too busy looking after family and work and things like that. But then we happened to be living next door to a family with four boys, two of whom were about exactly the same age as our two, and they both walked, and they encouraged my wife to get into it. So she joined the walking long before I did.
Mm-hmm.
So as occasionally I might have a day off, and I would, if it happened to be on a walking day, I would go walking with her and the groups that she belonged to. Mm-hmm. And so when I got around to retiring and thinking about what sort of things I could do, and I thought, well, she said, well, why don't you join the walking group full time or in a more permanent capacity? So I was quite happy to do that. Yes, and it's been a fantastic time as far as I'm concerned.
Which is great. So we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the club and all that sort of stuff. But one of the songs you chose for some music today was The Beatles, She Loves You, and it's probably about the same era that you two might have met.
It was, yeah, mm. very much so. I think I'd have to say, in all honesty, I'm not a big pop music fan, but certain songs have stuck in my brain over the time, and this was one that was very popular at the time. I do remember when the Beatles actually came to Cambridge when I was still a student there. I didn't, unfortunately, get to see their concert, but I know the noise was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's it. All right, well, let's play a bit of Beatles and we'll come back and we'll continue our chat with Quentin after that.
Ensure you get home safely and in one piece with ARB's range of recovery gear. From recovery points to shackles, jacks to recovery boards and straps, ARB has it all. Visit arb.com.au to organise all the recovery gear you'll need. Station sponsor.
We often hear all about the doom and gloom when it comes to drug problems. The fact is, though, more people than ever are now in treatment. There are many positive stories out there, real people who have overcome terrible problems. If your family is affected by drug or alcohol problems, check out an inspiring website. Just go to positivestories.org.au. That's positivestories.org.au.
And you know it can't be too bad. This is Ant-Man, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, local, live and loving it. Quentin is the president of the Croydon Walking Club, and so we just found out a little bit about you and your family history, Quentin, and that led us into your wife getting you involved in bushwalking.
Walking, yes, general.
You know, I've got to keep taking the bush out of it.
No, that's fine.
So talk to us about the club. You're the president of
Croydon Walking Club. Now, Croydon Walking Club has gone through a number of iterations, incarnations over what I suppose getting on for 30-odd years now.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it met in Moorabbark in a church hall. And around about 2000, you may recall that a whole host of new laws came in to do with things like public liability and all this sort of stuff, which had a fairly traumatic effect on a number of things like pony clubs and all that sort of stuff. And at that time, the club was approached by the management and required to do something about public liability insurance. The then committee investigated this and discovered it was going to cost far more than we could afford, and so we started to look around for alternative accommodation. And after a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, we went under the aegis of the Urunga Community Centre, which meets in Croydon.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved there in round about 2006, I think it was, finally. And we've been there until effectively until last year. And then there were some new laws came in to do with things like police checks and working with children checks and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, all the stuff you need to have in that.
Which
sort of
caused a certain amount of reaction, shall I say, within our club and within a number of other groups that certainly I'm associated with. And so we thought that we could no longer, for various reasons, remain under the aegis of the community centre, and so we've become an affiliate of the Victorian Bushwalking Victoria, which is the overarching group looking after walking clubs in Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we are. We still meet at Yeranga. We've come to an arrangement with them that we can meet there for the start of our walks, but we're no longer directly under their aegis anymore.
Right. Okay. So that's that. I guess that's all the controlling side of it.
Yes.
But as a club, then you're standalone.
Yes.
And you go off and do what you need to do, and you just have that one central meeting place where
that's
you do
right.
what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the club, it's obviously been going for, as you say, about 30 odd years.
Mm.
It will have changed quite substantially in that time, just in the type of people that you would have coming through the doors, because obviously what's the makeup of the people that come into the group age-wise?
Well, yes, it has changed, because certainly in the early days when it was more typical that the husbands were at work and wives were at home, far more women were walking than men. I mean, very frequently there might only be one or two, perhaps retired men, and a whole host of women walking in the club. But things have changed a lot now, and we have a fairly even spread of male and female.
Mm-hmm.
We have a wide-ranging age group, and we have people in their 80s walking, 70s, 60s, 50s, and perhaps even 40s.
Yep.
So we have a wide right spectrum of people from all walks of life. And one of the things that particularly I've enjoyed was the fact that when I joined the club, I moved into a totally different set of people from the ones I'd been associated with while I was working.
Mm-hmm.
And different people, different attitudes, different skills and all this sort of thing. It's a very sociable activity.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, you know, what are the benefits of joining a club, and I think you've just sort of started scratching into that sort
yes,
of side of
yes.
things, the sociability side.
Sociability, I think, is a very important aspect, particularly for people as they get older, particularly if you've lost a partner,
mm-hmm.
because it's very easy for people to become lonely, stay at home, but for a lot of people this is an activity that they can really enjoy. It's not just a walking activity, it's a social side of things.
Yep.
And clubs like the Bushwalking Club, and I belong to another one which is somewhat similar,
mm-hmm.
and not just bushwalking clubs, of course, but all sorts of clubs, we care a lot about our members, so that if somebody's sick, you know, somebody will go around and see them or send them a card and all this sort of stuff. So we don't just sort of see people once a week and then forget about them for the other 6 days of the week.
Mm. Okay. And so that really does mean that what you're doing is you're offering like a support package.
Oh, to some extent, I think that's correct.
Come
yes.
in and mm. you'll have a love. I mean, obviously you have a love of walking.
Yes.
Which means you're outside, and I would imagine it's outside in pretty much all weather.
Yes.
Yep.
We have limitations, of course, on when we walk. For example, if it gets too hot, we have a cut-off point of 32 degrees. We don't walk beyond that, simply for health reasons, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I can't think of too many walks I've had cancelled. We've had cancelled over the years I've been involved.
Yeah.
We have obviously cancelled one or two when it's been exceedingly hot.
Yes.
That's not to say people can't go walking if they want to, but they're not walking under the aegis of the club. They're purely doing it as a group of friends.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, you've got to have a duty of care, which is what you were talking
exactly.
about earlier. When you have a not-for-profit club, or any club really, but not-for-profit especially, you've got to make sure you can look after the people under your care.
That's right.
So,
so
I can see that as being an important part of it. So in understanding that, then you've got a club. How many members roughly?
It varies, but at the moment we have around 80 members.
So we're a reasonable size club.
We're certainly not in, by any means the largest club in Victoria, or even amongst the largest clubs in Victoria. There are some are very much larger. But we're certainly not a small club either. We're sort of probably slightly on the larger side of medium.
Yep. That's
good. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I get the idea on that one. All right. So, quite a big club, very social. Advantages are that you've got people that you can talk to, especially if you've lost somebody. What other benefits are there from joining a club?
Well, obviously, being out in the open is always good. Seeing the countryside, not being cooped up all the time, seeing the countryside. A degree of fitness, although I don't think walking per se necessarily generates fitness, but it keeps you fit if you're in a reasonable condition. Mm-hmm. Those are probably the major advantages. And again, a social side of things is, and this isn't necessarily true of every club, I would say, but certainly in the clubs I know, at the end of the walk, we'll often stop off on the way home at a coffee place somewhere and stop for a coffee,
mm-hmm.
where we can sort of unwind, as it were, from the adrenaline of the walk.
The adrenaline of the walk, you know. Yeah, that's right.
So I think that's
a good thing. I really love clubs that do support their members in that respect. Because, you know, taking it back to mental health issues, depression, things like that, if you can get out and get into the air and get exercise and all the rest of it, that is a natural helper to get your body and mind into the right space.
Yeah, it's a use it or lose it type thing, really, in many ways. It's interesting that if you are reasonably fit and for some reason you don't walk for a period of time, you lose that fitness very quickly.
Yeah, well, I think my father-in-law, Bruce, who listens to the show quite a lot, he's sort of into the 80s mark now, and he tends to try and walk 6 kilometres every day, to keep himself active, because I think the older you get, the harder it is on your body, so you do need to put that effort in.
Yes. The other benefit, if I can relate this personally, is that when you've achieved a degree of fitness, it helps if you have illness. Now, let me be more specific. In 2011, I had a massive heart attack, which was followed up with a quintuple bypass. Mm-hmm. And that put me out of action for a fair degree of time for rehabilitation.
Yep.
Had I not been reasonably fit to start with, I might not have made it in the first place, and I certainly would have had great difficulty getting back to walking later on.
Yeah, because
I had a degree of fitness to start with.
To start with, yeah. Mm. So, no, I think it's all really important stuff. There's lots of benefits in walking, just in basic walking without, the extra health benefits. All right, so we're going to come back and we're going to get into a little bit more about joining, how you join, all that sort of stuff, and what you should be looking for in a club and things like that. But we're going to play like a Rolling Stone, a bit of Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you like a bit of Bob Dylan.
Yep.
Yeah. Because of his sort of style of storytelling.
Well, I think he was different from when I was growing up, at least, or was into that sort of thing or interested in that in some way. He was a different character from people like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and that. He had a sort of different approach to things.
And very much a socialist, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, a folk singer of some sort.
So he did it. All right, let's a bit of Bob Dylan, like a Rolling Stone. This is Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, local, live and loving it.
So fine, do the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you, people call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall. You thought they were all kidding you. So loud.
so proud about having to be scrounging your next meal. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home? Like a complete unknown, like a rolling stone. But you know you only used to get juiced in it. Nobody's ever taught you how to live out on the street, and now you're gonna have to get used to it. You say you never compromise with a mystery tramp, but now you realize he's not selling.
How does it feel? Bit of Bob Dylan. This is Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. It's 2:42 p.m. And we've got Quentin Van Abbey in from the Croydon Walking Group. Quentin, we were talking before about your club and everything that's going on. Say someone like me wants to join a club, not sure how to go about it, you know, look up and there's like 20 different clubs there. How do you go about choosing a club and what questions should people ask if they're thinking about it?
Well, it's not exactly an easy question to ask because, you know...
Well,
how long
it's easy to ask. It's hard to answer.
It's hard to answer. How long's a piece of string, you know? But, you've Googled, used Dr. Google or whatever to get your initial list of clubs or something and you're wondering what to do. Well, I guess most, if you're lucky, you'll find some information like maybe a website. We have a website, for example, which has a contact number on there that you can send a question to. So you might send a simple question like, I'm interested in joining a walking club. Can you send me details of your club and when you meet, what you walk, sort of walks you do? And then with any luck, somebody will pick that up and give you a reasonably good response in terms of providing the information that hopefully will let you decide whether or not you want that particular club or whether you want to look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the first thing to do. You might even want to try several clubs before you settle on one. There's no guarantee that the first one you pick is going to be ideal for you for various reasons. You may not like the people or you may find the times don't necessarily suit or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's no problem. So, I mean, if someone like me says to you, hey, look, I wouldn't mind coming to a meeting... is that going to cost me? Do I have to, like, bring anything? It's a bit scary because I haven't done anything like this before. How do you address...
Well, normally what I do is that if I get a query, I tend to try and draft a sensible response in terms of what we do, where we meet, when you can turn up, what you need to do, and send them a copy of the rules of the club, which basically outline most of these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens in terms of things like payment and so on is that, yes, there is a membership fee which partly provides us with insurance. I mean, that's the whole point of having moved to become an affiliate of Bushwalking Victoria. So
yes.
Part of that covers the affiliation to Bushwalking Victoria. In fact, nothing of it really comes to us.
Mm. I think that's the general idea behind not-for-profit.
That's exactly right, yeah. We charge an individual walking fee each time people go out, and because we try and minimise the amount, obviously you don't want to take 50 cars if you've got 50 people coming, we carpool, and we like people to make a contribution to the driver, because obviously if you're driving any distance, you're chewing up petrol, particularly these days.
Yep.
So that's one of the things, and we'll also, the rules will give you some clues about what sort of equipment you might want to wear. We don't really like to think of people turning up wearing thongs, something like that. You need some sturdy shoes, depending on the grade of walk. Sometimes sneakers might be enough, but generally speaking, you'd expect people to wear boots, carry a rucksack, carry their day pack with a lunch in it, possibly even be prepared for change of conditions because, of course, Melbourne... conditions can change quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you might start off in...
We should have started this show with four seasons in one day.
Yes, well, I might have chosen Vivaldi's Four Seasons, for example, as another one.
Yes.
However, yes, so Melbourne's weather can be difficult sometimes. I mean, certainly in times I've been walking, we've been walking and we might have been drenched.
Yep.
1 minute and the sun's shining the next. So you do need to be prepared for all conditions.
Yep. Are there any tricky sort of rules? Like, because obviously you wouldn't want people turning up drunk or anything like that.
We don't want alcohol on walks, and we don't. We've never wanted people to smoke on walks, and we don't allow people to bring pets on walks.
Yep.
Which once or twice we've had people who've said, "Well, can I bring my dog?" And we've had to say no. We don't allow that. And the reason for that is not necessarily because we object to pets, but because sometimes we're walking in state parks and things where pets and dogs are not allowed.
Not allowed, yeah.
An interesting contrast with Canada, where in state parks you can take dogs.
Mm. Yeah, I think that taking dogs on in state parks is, you know, is okay if they're on a lead.
On the lead, yes, sure.
And all the rest of it. But, sure. Of course, you know, they're looking after our bush animals and our native animals. And,
exactly.
You know, so I could sort of see where that would go.
Oh, yes, yeah. Look, I can understand it. And those are the rules, so you have to abide by them.
Mm.
So generally speaking, we also like to look at people's degree of fitness. Now, no one's expecting you to be a super athlete when you're going on a walk, but you do have to be able to walk whatever distance the particular walk group that you've chosen is likely to be. So if, for example, you're going, if you think you're a hardy type and would like to do one of the day walks or the what we call our adventure walks, which might be anywhere 20K or more, we would like you to try an easier one before you do that so that we've got some estimate that you are actually capable of doing a longer walk. And we like people to, we can't impose conditions on people in terms of what they can and can't do, but we like people to be sensible and not try and do something that they really can't capable of doing.
Yeah, and I would imagine a lot of that is because if something does happen, you could be in the middle of nowhere, you've got to have things in place to get an ambulance or help. You might not always have phone service. So I could see that, again, coming down to a duty of care sort of responsibility where, you know, if somebody turned up and you knew that they had heart problems and, you know, they were fired up to do a hard walk and you're going to say, well, look, maybe not because, and, you know, they have to agree to that.
Yeah, we have advised very occasionally somebody who's thinking of coming on one of our walks, we've said to them, well, maybe you shouldn't do this particular one. It might be another one in the same category, but maybe they're having problems, say, climbing hills or something like that, whereas on a flatter one, they wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of safety, usually I think there's always somebody on the walk will be carrying some sort of safety equipment in terms of bandages and all this sort of stuff in case of, well, you don't want snake bite, for example, or anything, something like that.
Yep.
Now, on some of our walks, we're actually out of phone range, and that could be a problem. For our harder walks, we actually have a satellite phone, which is we carry with us, so that if we ever have a real emergency, we can make contact.
Yeah, which again, I think is a good common sense thing.
Now, we also want most of our walks to be reconnoitred before we actually do them. So we encourage, we don't have only one leader. We like to share the leading of walks around amongst people in the club, particularly people who are willing to do it. So they will be given a walk, they'll be given a map, and it's suggested then that they take two or three people with them and go and do a recce of the walk to find out, well, firstly, maybe the walk can't be done now. Trees have fallen over the track or the bridge is washed away or something like that.
Yep.
And they have to come back and say, well, look, I'm sorry, we couldn't do that walk. Or there's no guarantee, of course, that having done the recce, that the bridge doesn't fall down in the meantime, but at least they've done their duty.
Their homework.
We like people to recce the walk beforehand. So that also means that there's a fair chance that they won't get lost on the day. It's okay to get lost when there's only two or three of you. It's a bit of a different question when you're taking 20 people with you or something like that.
I can just imagine that being really quite funny. I shouldn't, but yeah. So typically then, When you go on these walks, and we're going to talk about different grades of walk, probably after the news now at 3 o'clock, or we don't have news at 3 anymore, it's at 3.30, but after 3 o'clock there'll be a little bit of news. But we'll talk about that more, but typically how many people would go on a walk?
Well, on average, I think probably most weeks spread out amongst the walks we do, we probably average somewhere around about 25 to 30 people most weeks.
So it's a really interesting mix then of people you can work with.
It has changed because I know in the early days when my wife was walking, there were occasions, and the club was bigger then, when they had up to 60 or 70 on a walk.
Wow.
Which means effectively, of course, you've then got a long crocodile. That's too many on a single walk as far as I'm concerned. I would split it into two if we were in that situation. But nevertheless, What it means is that when you're stopping for lunch, by the time the first people have finished their lunch, the last ones are just meandering in.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's a thing. What day do you guys meet? What day do
we meet on a Friday?
Mm-hmm.
I also walk in a group on a Monday.
Yep.
Different group. As I say, we meet in Croydon. The other group meets in what used to be the old Parkwood High School in North Ringwood.
North Ringwood, okay. Well, we might talk about that a little bit more too in our second hour.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put on a bit of Rolling Stones just to get us up towards the 3 o'clock break. The Last Time, just something that appeals to you?
Yes, look, I was more a fan of the Beatles than the Rolling Stones, and I didn't like everything the Rolling Stones did, but there are a few songs. Satisfaction's one, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The Last Time, a couple of other ones, which I really quite enjoyed. And this is one of them.
This is one of them. All right, let's do it. The Rolling Stones, The Last Time. This is Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. It's 2:53 p.m.
ARB 4x4 Accessories is a proud sponsor of Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show and a station sponsor. Whether it be frontal protection, a drawer system to increase storage, or a recovery kit to ensure you don't get stuck in the bush without a way out. Head to ARB today to ensure you're ready for whatever our harsh Aussie terrain will throw your way. Visit arb.com.au to explore the products that are right for you or find your closest ARB store or stockist.
All right, and it's now time for a community service announcement here at Yarra Valley FM, and it's 2:57. Callista Art and Craft Market, Saturday the 3rd of November, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Callista Community House, 2 Church Street, Callista. Make it, bake it, grow it. Plants, art and craft, foodstuffs, organic bread, natural products, vegetarian meals, homemade soup, great coffee, light refreshments for sale. For site bookings, call Tina on 0421 674 990, and site fee support Callista Community House. Now, it's all about supporting our community. That's what our station's all about. And so you can get involved as a sponsor. There's plenty of spots available. There's some amazing shows that we've got available that can be sponsored if you're open to it and want to help out and keep this station alive. We're looking for new presenters. We're always on the lookout for new presenters, different shows that they can offer. So it's definitely worth getting involved with the station, and there's a lot you can do. Now, if you want more information, you can go to www.yarravalleyfm.com. If you want to send us an email, it's info@yarravalleyfm.com. And if you've got somebody out there in the Yarra Valley that deals with tourism, four-wheel driving, bushwalking, cycling, all that sort of stuff, and you want to get on the show and talk about it, that's what this show's all about. It's not just four-wheel drive, and it's not just dealing with caravanning. We like to think we can get quite a few things happening on this show. And keep that in mind, because we're always looking for new angles and new different bits and pieces to give information over for. All right, so we are coming up to the news fairly quickly as I start playing around with the system. I think I'm managing to actually get it to sort of half work after all these weeks, which is a good thing. And then after the news, we'll be back again with Quentin Van Abbey. I should also mention www.croydonbushwalking.info will get you through to their website. We're going to talk about that a little bit more as well. So I think now it's time for the news. This is Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show, and we'll be back with you really soon.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
Cartwright. Today is a day of total fire ban for WA's Pilbara, Mid West Gascoyne and Goldfields Midlands. A federal Labor government would increase the number of Australians studying Asian languages, the opposition says. The proportion of Year 12 students studying Asian languages has stagnated in recent years, but opposition education spokeswoman Tanya Plibersek wants to rectify that. If elected, Labor would invest $32 million to boost Asian literacy in schools with an 8-point plan. Ms Plibersek told the ABC future jobs will revolve around the Asian market and students need to be prepared.
We actually have fewer people studying particular languages today than we had 20 years ago. It's a real gap in our education system if we've got numbers of people studying some languages declining rather than increasing.
The FBI has launched a terrorism investigation after at least 6 explosive devices were sent to US Democratic politicians and supporters, including former Presidents Obama and Clinton. FBI officials have confirmed the multiple similar packages seem to be connected. CNN's office in New York was also evacuated after a live device and an envelope of white powder was found. US President Donald Trump.
We're extremely angry, upset, unhappy about what we witnessed this morning, and we will get to the bottom of it.
Former Victoria Police Chief Commissioner Kel Glare says Labor MPs who refuse to cooperate with a police probe into the party's Rorts for Votes scandal should be arrested. More from Arthur Stevens.
Victoria Police Fraud and Extortion Squad is investigating the 2014 election campaign rort in which Labor used parliamentary allowances to partially pay party campaign staff. 11 current Labor MPs, including six ministers, are caught up in the probe, according to the Herald Sun. The Victorian Ombudsman said in March that while the scheme was an artifice, Labor MPs didn't set out to deliberately deceive. The party has repaid $387,842 to Parliament. Arthur Stevens, Melbourne.
An inquiry into the convictions of serial baby killer Kathleen Megan Folbig will likely focus on new research and medical advances, including multiple natural infant deaths in the one family, a court has heard. Folbig was jailed in 2003 for at least 25 years after she was found guilty of killing her four babies in the decade from 1989. But the New South Wales government in August agreed to a judicial review of her case. They may have borne a green and gold label shaped like a map of Australia, but Auswear Connection's classic UGG range was made in China, an alleged false impression that has seen the company pay a $25,000 fine. The ACCC issued two infringement notices to Auswear for alleged false country of origin representations after it claimed on its website that it is 100% Aussie-owned and that its classic UGG range was made using the best materials available in Australia. To the markets, Asian shares have dived as hundreds of billions of dollars hemorrhaged from global markets after a rout in tech stocks inflicted their largest daily decline on Wall Street since 2011, wiping out all of its gains for the year. The S&P ASX 200 has fallen 1.98 points to 5,713.2. The All Ordinaries are down 1.99 points to 5,808.4. And the Aussie dollar is up slightly to 70.69 US cents. This is AIR News. Victoria has made a good start as the second round of Sheffield Shield matches got underway today. New South Wales was 8 for 131, 40 minutes before tee, with Curtis Patterson on 55. Chris Tremaine had four wickets, with Scott Boland taking two, including Jack Edwards, who was LBW for 34, to end a 50-run fourth wicket partnership with Patterson. In Adelaide, Queensland was 4 for 127 after being sent in by South Australia. Joe Burns was on 61 and Jack Wildermuth 32. The pair having added 57 runs after Joe Menny had removed Matt Renshaw and Marnus Labuschagne, both for three. Adelaide United have lost key recruit Mirko Boland for Friday night's A-League fixture against Newcastle Jets. The German midfielder, who made an impressive debut for the Reds in last week's season opener, has been ruled out of the fixture in Adelaide because of a hip injury. Joe Ingles played a support role as young gun Donovan Mitchell grabbed 38 points in a confidence-boosting 100-98 Utah Jazz victory of NBA Western Conference rivals Houston Rockets. Beaten 4-1 by the Rockets in last season's conference semifinals, the Jazz...
The weather is sponsored by Healesville Garden Supplies.
Healesville Garden Supplies is now stocking a new range of organic potting mixes, compost and fertilisers. Organic seedlings now back in stock. Now is the time to get a rainwater tank to catch the spring rains before the hot summer arrives. Pool and spa testing and chemicals available in store. Succulent Snacks Cafe is open Wednesday to Sunday with some new menu options coming soon. Our highly qualified florist is now taking bookings for 2019 weddings and still has limited dates available for 2018. Open and delivering 7 days a week. Healesville Garden Supplies, 82 Maroondah Highway, Healesville. 5962 5054.
And it's 6 minutes past 3 p.m. here at Yarra Valley FM, 99.1. It's 21.6 degrees outside. We're slowly dropping, and I've noticed when I look out the window that there's a bit of cloud happening out there. So it was going to be mostly sunny, but yeah, now it's going a bit cloudy. And that'll set the sort of scene for tomorrow with a minimum 5, maximum of 18, and partly cloudy. On Saturday, there'll be minimum 5 to a maximum of 20 with possible showers. Sunday will be minimum 4 to a maximum of 21, partly cloudy. Monday the 29th, minimum 3 to a maximum of 24. while Tuesday will be minimum 6 to a maximum of 29, so getting up there before Wednesday the 31st of October, minimum 7 and maximum 26. And I hope you've got your inner scare on because it's Halloween night. All right, it is time to get back into the show. This is Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here at Yarra Valley FM, and we better kick it off with a bit of a sponsor.
ARB 4x4 Accessories is a proud sponsor of Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show and a station sponsor. Whether it be frontal protection, a drawer system to increase storage, or a recovery kit to ensure you don't get stuck in the bush without a way out, head to ARB today to ensure you're ready for whatever our harsh Aussie terrain will throw your way. Visit arb.com.au to explore the products that are right for you, or find your closest ARB store or stockist.
Okay, we're back in it. Now, we've been chatting with Quentin Van Abbey about walking in general, and I have to sort of say, Quentin, thanks again for coming in. When we're talking about walking, we're talking about your standards. So you've got three styles of walk that you were talking about. Explain those.
Yes, that's right. Well, bearing in mind the range of ages amongst our group, and also the fact, of course, that sometimes you just can't do the walk you would like to do for various reasons. You might have an appointment or something. Maybe you want a simpler walk, whatever. We have three grades of walk. We call what we call our easier walks, which tend to be around about 6-7K long, mm-hmm. tend to be in the local area around Croydon, not involving large amounts of driving. And they usually could be anywhere up to a dozen people on that particular walk, maybe more sometimes, but usually no more than about a dozen people. And it tends to be people who, for various reasons, can no longer do longer walks, or maybe they just don't want to do longer walks mm-hmm. for any reason.
Is that one that, say, somebody that is incredibly unwalk fit would be able to do to start themselves in that process of getting...
Perhaps, yes, probably. I mean, that would be the walk you, if you weren't accustomed to walking, you should probably start off with, just to make sure you can actually do that much. Mm-hmm. And then if you can manage to do the easier walk, 6-7K, you might consider moving on to one of our rambles, which is the next level, which is sort of anywhere from 6 to 12-13K, something like that. And usually involves driving to somewhere, maybe the Dandenongs or something like that. Perhaps, 40 minutes driving, 35 minutes driving. And then a walk which may or may not involve a bit of hill about it as well. So mm-hmm. immediately you've moved on to something a little more difficult. So you do need to be a little more fit, obviously. Otherwise you'll struggle in those kind of environments. Then we move on to... those people who consider themselves to be ready for something a bit more taxing, what we call our day and adventure walks. And the difference between the two is that the day walk is normally one that's reconnoitred, as I said before, mm-hmm. Whereas the adventure walk, essentially what we do is we look at a map, decide somewhere looks quite good, maybe there's a track, maybe there isn't a track, but we'll put it on the program and it's not reconnoitred. So you turn up and you hope you can do it.
Yep.
It may be much longer. The day walks are frequently anywhere between, say, 14 to 20K, something like that. The adventure walk may be longer. It might be shorter if it was in a very difficult area, but to some extent it's an unknown. That's why it's called an adventure walk.
I like the sound of that.
Well, it can be a lot of fun. Also, sometimes it isn't quite so much fun when things don't quite go according to plan. But nevertheless, it all comes out in the wash, and it's usually we don't get too many complaints from people about the walks, whether it's a hard walk or an easy walk.
As long as they enjoy it.
Well, that's the main thing. And again, if you, say, are typically a ramble walker, or maybe let's say you're a day walker, and you suddenly start to find it's getting harder and harder, and you might decide, well, I want to go on walking, but I don't think I can manage these day walks anymore. You can drop down to the ramble walk where you're pretty sure you can still manage 10, 11, 12K, something like that. Mm. And then maybe as you get older or you get more unfit, you've had an operation or two, and you may find you can no longer even do the ramble walks. So you can drop back to the easy walks. You know, we want to keep people in the club as long as possible.
Mm. Keep them fit, keep them happy,
keep them out in the open, keep them fit, keep them meeting up with their friends. Yeah. And I should point out that for a lot of the people in the club, we don't just confine ourselves to meeting on the walks. We might do things like going away.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, our group normally has a week away around about March time. We've been going for about 10 years now, getting on that way, up into the mountains, Mount Hotham or Mount Buller, Falls Creek, somewhere like that, Bor Bor, mm-hmm. Spending a week up there walking. As a group, you know, get a chalet and go off on daily walks.
Yeah, well, I mean, the in-laws basically belong to, I think it was the Diamond Valley Walking Group, and they would quite often do exactly that. They would go somewhere down the coast, they'd hire some accommodation for a certain number of people, and off they went.
That's
and had
right.
a bit of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, we don't do overnight walks. I know there are some groups that do. We've looked at it, but we've decided that, no, that's not for us. If you want to do that, you'll have to look elsewhere.
Elsewhere, but then that's not a bad thing.
No.
You know, you get what you need.
That's right.
All right, we're going to do some community service announcements next, and then we're going to have a crack at getting the CD to work. Now, the song we're going for is In the Depths of the Temple.
Yes, this is... an interesting song in the sense that the ABC runs various polls of their members.
You know, you can't mention them. They're our opposition.
Oh, I'm sorry. Shall we say another station? Another station runs community polls of music of various sorts, and this particular one came out at the top of the 100 best opera items you couldn't do without.
Okay.
It's a beautiful song, in my opinion, and it's beautifully sung by two quality artists, Robert Merrill and Jussi Björling.
Mm. Okay, well, let's do the community service announcements to get us going and see whether I can manage this or not. Because every week, as I said to you during the break, every week I seem to be the one that cups all the things that go wrong. So we'll try it. It's 14 minutes past three here at Yarra Valley FM.
Station sponsor, Warburton Curry Club, is an authentic, fully licensed Indian restaurant. They offer dine-in, pick-up, takeaway, delivery and catering within the local area. They are open for dinner from Tuesdays to Sundays, 4pm till 9pm, and for lunch on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays from 12 till 2:30pm. Find Warburton Curry Club at 3463 Warburton Highway, Warburton. Call 5966-9182 to make reservations and to place orders, or for your convenience, visit www.warburtoncurryclub.com.au to order and make reservations online. Station sponsor.
Occasionally in life, you get the chance to achieve something extraordinary. Something that inspires others and proves something to yourself. That something is Oxfam Trail Walker. Tackle 50 or 100 kilometres of bush trail, day and night, to end poverty. Join us in Melbourne March 23rd to 25th, and we'll tackle poverty together. Register now at trailwalker.oxfam.org.au.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1 is conducting free radio presenter courses for anyone interested in becoming a radio presenter or panel operator. However, if presenting is not for you, we're also looking for volunteers to get involved behind the scenes in the areas of office assistance, recording of community service announcements, fundraising and sponsorship, as well as setup and attendance at our outside broadcasts. If you are interested in becoming a part of the Yarra Valley FM 99.1 team, please email info@yarravalleyfm.com for more information.
Before the dawn was sown,
something quite powerful in that one, Quentin. I love it.
It's one of my favourites.
Yeah, no, it's nice to... I mean, you know, I don't often play classical style music, although I grew up with a bit of it on the show. So it's nice that when my guests come on, we get such a good range of music. So, no, that's great. Okay, so let's get into it. We're getting to the pointy end of the show. But what's your favourite walks in the Yarra Valley and why?
Well, we do a lot of walks around. We're very lucky over this side of town. We have such a wide variety of green countryside that we can actually visit. So one of the tracks that is used quite a lot by the walking group is the Warburton Trail, which, of course, runs just behind here.
Yes.
We've done most of that trail at various times, not all at once, of course, because it's fairly long, but certainly we've done bits of it from each end and in the middle and so on. So we've probably covered almost all of it.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of walks. I think you can also... Now, what's the other one you can see around here? Warramatti is another one you can see from this area. We go up there quite a bit.
Whereabouts is that?
I'm not sure if it's here or further back. One of the hilly areas around, anyway. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of walks a little further out towards the Warburton area.
Yes.
Either in Warburton itself, there's a beautiful walk along the river there.
A stunning walk. Yep.
And we can do quite a few walks starting from Warburton and going up through the hills on the other side.
On the other side, Warburton. Because I know there's a good lookout that you can walk up to.
There's lots of areas around there. So Warburton is a good area that attracts quite a lot of our walking.
Mm-hmm.
I was there last week, in fact. We were doing a walk up there.
Nice.
I led a walk up in that area. We can go further out and we can go to places. This is a slightly different area, but we do a lot of walks in the Toolangi Forest.
Oh, yep. Toolangi State Forest. Again, another beautiful walk along the river. And
there's all sorts of walks in these areas. Mm. And then Murrindindi is another area as well. They're not necessarily immediately associated here, but all these areas around here have massive varieties of different walks, whether you want something that's flat, whether you want hills. We like, I think, in both the rambles and the day and adventure walks to provide a variety of country so that you're not just looking at one sort of scenery. And in fact, the scenery around here can be very varied. You can be walking in ferns 1 minute, the next minute you turn a corner and you're walking in a totally different sort of flora.
Yep.
You can see all sorts of animals too. It's not uncommon at all to see wild deer in some of these places. Lyrebirds abound in some of the walks we do.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to say what's a favourite walk. I think in a way, gosh, that's almost too hard to answer. I don't think I can really give you a sensible answer there, because the moment I pick one, I'm going to say, no, that's not the best. There's a better one.
Yeah, look, I know it's an open-ended question.
Yeah.
You know, it's a question that has to be asked.
Yeah.
So while we're talking locally things, I've spent a bit of time walking around Hillsville and in the bush.
Yes,
you know, over
Hillsville's another great area.
Leeches tend to be a big problem.
Oh yes,
ticks are a problem on walks. And
ticks, not so much.
Not so much here.
Not here.
But on some
so
of the
much.
Walks I've done in here in Victoria,
yes,
absolutely, especially down Gippsland Way.
Yes.
And so they're things. They're natural disasters, but chafing would be another natural disaster from based on walking.
Yeah, blisters, that can be a problem. The occasional turned ankle, that sort of stuff. I mean, it's not going to incapacitate you completely, but it's going to make walking extremely uncomfortable.
Yep.
I think probably the one that freaks out a lot of people are leeches.
Yes.
They really don't like leeches. And if you're unlucky enough to be allergic to them, that can be a real problem. We have a number of members who definitely are allergic to leeches, and there are some walks around which are well known for as being leech country. For example, walking out to the Ada tree.
Yes.
It's a beautiful walk, but boy, you've got to be prepared for the leeches.
Mm. And in the right conditions, because we were out at the Ada tree not that long ago, and we're sort of lucky. But, you know, I've been out in different weather, like I said, spent a lot of time in the bush, and, yeah, leeches are a pain. And I can imagine for people that are on, let's just say, slightly older people than myself who are on drugs for blood thinning.
Exactly.
Having a leech on you could be a real issue.
Yes, certainly. Mm.
Or multiple.
Yep. I must say, on was it Monday when we were walking, it wasn't an area where we really would have expected necessarily to get leeches, but people still managed to find one or two of them. Mm. They're all around.
Yeah, they tend to like me. I'm not sure why, but I tend to find them between my toes, even though I'm wearing boots and you know, generally have my...
Well, you'd make an ideal leader. Send you in front to attract all the leeches.
Well, look, I've done a lot of archery over the years, and one of the clubs was Hillsville, where archery is like a golf, the sort of archery that I was doing. It's sort of like a golf course through the bush. So you have a shooting lane from where you stand to a butt, and then you'll move off to another one. And I always distinctly remember we were up there and we had one of the longest shots, which can be up to sort of 64 metres or whatever. And all the leeches were just sitting on the leaves. They could smell us and they were just waiting for us to walk past. And it was frightening how many people were having to get rid of leeches and things. So, but it shouldn't... I mean, ultimately, you can leave them. They will drop off, but you can also smother them, you know, bandage them with a bit of Glad Wrap and oil. And what's the bush walking club, or in this case, the walking club's way of dealing with people with leeches?
Well... We don't know we really have a defined procedure. People tend to flick them off. And then depending on your own particular predilection, you may apply a bit of cream or Dettol or something like that, you know, some sort of salve to
try and stop the itch and stop the itching. And the
it's not so much the bite of the leech itself, it's the itching afterwards. I notice that I do get bitten quite frequently by leeches, but when I've got rid of them, it'll be a day or so later before they start itching.
And
like
then
fury.
Some. Well, I mean, the same goes with ticks. I mean, quite often people break them off in the skin.
Yes, not a good thing to
which
do.
Which is not a good thing, but one of the things that I found works really well is a little bit of Glad Wrap, a bit of oil on the and tape. Tape the actual Glad Wrap to the skin with the leech in the oil, and that smothers them and they die and fall out. But you've got to be, you know, you've got to carry that sort of stuff with you as well, obviously.
Yes,
you can't carry the salt, vinegar, water for your leeches, or you can, that's what they used to. But you've still got to be prepared.
Well, usually there's always somebody on one of the walks who's carrying enough of a medical kit to be able to cater for most things.
And should that be the group leader?
Well, possibly, yes. I mean, usually... I think you'll find that in most cases the leader usually is carrying something.
Mm.
We've never made it a requirement because we like to think that most people will be carrying something in their own kit.
Yes.
Anyway.
And you would advise them on what to carry if they didn't know?
Yes, I think, yes, we would. You can't carry everything, so you do have to be selective. I mean, you can carry a minimal amount of stuff. I carry a little bit in my day pack. Touch wood, I've never had to use it. But we have had, I must admit, on a Friday walk, but on a Monday walk, we've had a couple of people fall over and break an ankle or break a leg. Not, interestingly enough, during the walk itself, but getting up after lunch and they're just sliding on a patch of gravel or something like that.
Okay.
So, I mean, it can happen. And you really do need to be aware of this in case you need, well, in a case like that, for example, you need to call an ambulance. And you need to know that you are within mobile phone range or else you're carrying the satellite phone.
Yeah, no, that's it. All right, you're chatting with Ant-Man and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show. We've got Quentin Van Abbey in and we're about to head to the local news at 3:30. So we will be back after that.
David Oaten with Yarra Valley FM 99.1 local news. Police are searching for a gang who viciously assaulted a young man in Moorabbin after he drove home two women he met at a music festival. The 26-year-old Mulgrave man was set upon by a gang of men after driving home from a music festival in St Kilda on Sunday, October the 14th. He was taken to hospital with serious facial injuries. It is believed the victim and a friend had offered to give two girls a lift to their home in Moorabbin after meeting at the festival. Police allege the victim was beaten unconscious by four or five men as he stepped out of his car in Sheridan Avenue about 10:30 p.m. The victim's friend rushed to his aid as the offenders fled in a silver Toyota Hilux Ute. The victim was taken to hospital with a broken cheek and nose and will require surgery. Police have spoken to a number of witnesses, but anyone with information is urged to call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000. In Kilsyth, information on a Montrose-bound Nissan Navara is being sought by Moorabbin police after a hit and run. Police believe the dark SUV crashed into the back of a maroon Commodore sedan at the intersection of Hawthorne and Mount Dandenong Roads about 5:15 p.m. on October the 16th. The crash caused the sedan to crash into a silver Toyota sedan that was waiting at traffic lights. Police believe the SUV left the scene in the direction of Montrose. Anyone who witnessed the incident or has dashcam footage is urged to phone Moorabbin Police on 9725 9999. Fire authorities are issuing a warning to the community with dry outlook for the season ahead. Despite recent spring rain, CFA maps show grassland was a lot drier than this time last year. CFA Chief Officer Steve Warrington reminded residents to register their burn-offs and check the area's conditions on the day. Even if you have registered your burn, conditions can change quickly and fires can get out of control within minutes in hot and windy conditions, Mr. Warrington said. The effects of an out-of-control fire can be devastating, and we want everyone to exercise extreme caution, especially with the fire season beginning early. He said residents should be vigilant in checking restrictions, weather conditions, and council local laws. An Eltham man died after a road accident in Healesville. Victoria Police leading senior constable Melissa Seach said a red Honda motorbike was riding along Myers Creek Road when it collided with a green Toyota Hilux about 10:40 a.m. on Saturday, October the 6th. The 62-year-old bike rider died at the scene. The 30-year-old Werribee male driver of the Hilux is helping police with their investigation. Police have been told a red car was seen driving behind the Hilux prior to the crash and left before police arrived. Police would like to speak with any witnesses. That's the news from the Yarra Valley. I'm David Oaten.
In conjunction with the Mail and Leader newspapers, that's Yarra Valley FM local news.
Hallelujah. roots in folk music.
Tune into the Bat Cave
every Monday night from 9 p.m. with two weird old guys.
My God, it's full of stars.
My gosh, that noise is a bit interesting at times. This is Ant-Man, and it's Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. We're talking with Quentin Van Abbey from the Croydon Bushwalking, well, Walking Club, and we've just been having this discourse on rubbish in the bush. I don't think we should, you know, everyone knows out there in radio land that I have an ant rant every so often, and rubbish is my big rant. I hate people that dump rubbish. It's wrong on all levels. But anyway, walking in Australia. So we've covered sort of some of the local stuff. What's you were talking about your Red Centre trip recently?
Yes, recently a group of the Walking Club went to the Red Centre. Something I've always wanted to do for years and years and years, and never got around to it. And we didn't do any really long walks. The longest walk we did was a 16K walk when we climbed up and down Mount Sonder. But it's such a such a different countryside from the sort of countryside we're accustomed to walking in around here. Mm-hmm. It's very different. Very interesting, but very different.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody that spent a lot of time out in the outback, especially in central Australia, it's stunning, the colour and the variations and the spin effects and the way it works and grows and grows out in circles and, you know, all the tracks that you can see out there and, yeah.
But some of the walking was quite interesting. For example, Kings Canyon, a beautiful walk around the rim there.
Yep.
Very interesting.
Or even walking around the rock, not over the rock, but around the rock is just amazing.
Yes, we did that. It's interesting.
You know, I think, too, one of the things about the walking around the rock, if you get a guide to give you the information, there's so many stories. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, walking for me is a little bit like meditation. You know, I can just set my mind, put my work stuff out of my mind and just go, yeah, look at that, look at that. And, yes, you've got to be wary where you put your feet and your hands and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, when we travel, we quite often I'm travelling with a backpack with a drone and then I've got two cameras and all the rest of it. So I'm carting a lot of gear when I travel. Geez, you get to see some beautiful places once you get out of the car.
Yes, you do. Absolutely. And I think that's probably one of the things about just the normal walking that we do is that we... One of the things we try and do is to not recirculate a walk in less than 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we'll do a walk and then we'll put it on ice for a couple of years. So when it comes back again, hopefully you've forgotten about it and you can enjoy it completely again. you don't really want to be doing the same sort of walk every week. So we try and vary things as much as possible. We also try to make sure we choose the right conditions for walking. For example, you don't really want to be walking out in the open in midsummer. It's nice to choose a foresty area so you've got some shade, a bit of cover. And likewise, you wouldn't do a really tricky walk necessarily smack in the middle of winter when it's likely to be pouring with rain and rocks are going to be slippery and tracks are going to be sticky and so on. So we do spend quite a bit of time trying to select our walks carefully to make sure that we're giving everybody a good experience.
Yeah, and I think that's important. I mean, you know, you've got to cater for everybody, yes, and you've got to cater for common sense,
yes,
you know, as much as anything else. You know, there's certain things like, as you know, up in the high country, you know, I've been up in the high country in summer when it's been 30 degrees one day and snow the next.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so you really do have to be prepared and you really do have to sort of know what you're doing. And
You also have to be prepared to make the decision not to do something. Yes. So, for example... I was talking to one of our walkers recently who on an occasion had gone to do a walk and they discovered that there was very, very thick fog and decided it simply wasn't safe to do the walk that particular day. It was a recce, so it wasn't going to affect too many people. But nonetheless, the decision was a sensible one.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good thing. And you would think with our elderly folk, they're capable of making sensible decisions.
Well, you hope so, yes. Most of the time, yes.
Says me with a big grin on my face being cheeky as. Yeah. But, no, that's all right. Now, you also talked before about being fit before you had your quadruple bypass.
Yes.
And the fact that that helped you to get through it and then get back on your feet and moving around. Now, you were telling me an interesting story about a trip you did into the UK after that.
Yes, well, the bypass was in 2011. And as I said, I don't think if I had not been reasonably fit, either I wouldn't have survived, which I nearly didn't anyway, or I certainly wouldn't have been back on my feet as quickly as I was. Skip forward to 2016, and we were due to go overseas. My wife and I were going overseas to do a river cruise, and we were going to meet a friend in England, and we were going to do the coast-to-coast walk from the west coast of England to the east coast of England. Unfortunately, my wife fell and broke her leg just a week before we were due to go overseas.
What a horrible
thing. But she was very kind and said, well, I'm going to be in rehab for most of the time you're doing the walk, so you may as well go. So we went, the two of us went, and we did the coast-to-coast walk. Now, that's 320 kilometres, which we did in 16 days. Now, that's an average of 20k a day. We didn't do 20k every day. A couple of days we did more, some days we did less, but the average was 20k a day. A 20k walk to us wasn't particularly difficult. What was difficult was doing it every day, getting up in the morning knowing you had to do it. You couldn't say, I don't feel like walking today, I'm going to stay here, because we were staying in accommodation and we knew somebody would be in that accommodation later on that day. So we had to get out.
Yes.
So we had to do it. And that was one of the most exhilarating experiences of my life, doing that coast-to-coast walk. I really enjoyed it. We had some interesting experiences. We had every condition imaginable on that walk.
I can imagine. I spent time touring around the UK.
Well, the first thing you do starting from the west coast is to walk through the Lake District. I have spent quite a bit of time in the Lake District in the past, and there are some magnificent walking in that countryside there.
Stunning.
However, the first 2 days of the walk, we had unrelenting rain and wind. And on the second day, we were due to be picked up at the end point of the walk and driven by taxi to a hotel where we were staying for the night. And the taxi wasn't there when we got there, and we went to find out what had happened, and the roads had been blocked by the flooding from the incessant rain. Eventually the taxi turned up, took one look at the two of us, the driver got out, went into the back of the car, got out a tarpaulin and put it on the seat before he'd let us get into the taxi, because we were dripping wet, soaking, muddy, whatever. So we weren't miserable about it. We enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. You know, what's the point in getting miserable about something you know is going to be a part of that journey?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? It's. I love the fact that that's the adventure that you're creating.
Exactly. You
know? Yeah. So I think that's a really special part about it. All right. Well, we've got one more song we're going to play, which you chose, which is "Live and Let Die" from Paul McCartney and Wings. Obviously, ex-Beatle.
Well, of course, this was one of the Bond films. "Live and Let Die," obviously. And it just seems to me that it's perhaps what the Beatles could have gone on to had they continued as a group. It really is. I think it's a terrific song.
All right. Well, I think we should play it. It's 3:46 p.m. here at Yarra Valley FM 99.1 and Ant Man's RV and 4x4 show.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, used to say, live and let live.
You know you did.
But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say, live and let die.
Live and let die.
if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in a lie. Say, live and let die.
Get it?
Remember. Remember the three-headed goat show. 7 to 9, Thursday nights. Yarra Valley FM, 99.1.
We are the knights who say...
But seriously, listener, what else are you going to do on a Thursday night? Rearrange your sock drawer?
Eric, stop it. So grab a coldie, pull up a deck chair and tune in to Pete, Tone Ranger and the Python for
good rock and music, ridiculous banter and handy life tips.
Well, let's not get too carried away. Stop it, Eric.
Three at a Goat Show, 7 to 9, Thursday nights. Peter Harvey, Warry Alec.
Say no more!
Yeah, well, we won't say any more, really. But don't forget, Ray and Sydney are on. Ray and Sydney. Ray and Cindy are on at 5 o'clock this afternoon, so you'll be able to catch the drive show home. We're chatting with Quentin Van Abbey, and we've been talking about all things walking, bushwalking, walking in general, covering a really broad range of things that you don't think about if you think, I want to join a walking club. Because you just go, well, yeah, you do it. But when we've had the conversation, there's been so much more come up about different ways to do it, what to do, what you've got to take into account. It's not simply just rock up somewhere and go for a wander, is it?
No, not exactly. Good footwear, that's the most important thing, which we haven't really mentioned.
Mm.
But sure, sneakers are fine for walking on flat tracks, but they don't cut it if you're clambering over rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And good footwear is a prerequisite. I can speak with some authority on this, having worn the wrong footwear for a period of time and made some damage to my feet. They're fine now, but, you know, it's not good to wear the wrong stuff.
No, I think, you know, it is something we touched on in our chat previously, but so you offer people, you can offer people suggestions on what has worked and what hasn't worked and what they should get and what they shouldn't. Are people normally pretty happy to take on that suggestion?
Yes, well, look, I'm disinclined ever to recommend something because that's a very dangerous practice. Mm. All I can say to people is, well, this is what I do and it works for me.
Mm.
And I know that somebody else does something else and it works for them, you know, and leave it up to you to make the choice about what you think is the right thing to do for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like recommending a restaurant. You recommend a restaurant to somebody, they go and try it and they say it was terrible. Well, unfortunately, the chef had changed or something like that.
It's always like that. Yeah. But there would be things like you would say, look for this sort of size, the type of sole. You probably want leather that you can then use a product to keep it dry and keep it supple.
And what's a good, perhaps what's a good jacket to wear?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, a lot of the time you may be walking in shirt sleeves or just a top. But sometimes you may need to wear a jacket, and you may want a waterproof jacket of some sort,
mm-hmm.
and some are better than others. One of the worst things about having to wear wet weather gear is, of course, that you tend to perspire inside.
Yes.
And sometimes you feel almost as wet inside as you are outside from the perspiration. Now, some wet weather gear is much better than others from the point of view of breathing.
Yes.
And similarly with headgear, you don't necessarily want to walk around bareheaded when it's pouring with rain or snowing or anything like that. Or, of course, even when it's sunny, you want to protect your head. Mm. So all these sort of things do play a part, and we certainly would be unhappy for people who just sort of front up. We've said to them, please come along, you can walk, and then they just turn up in, you know, shorts and a singlet. No, that's not the right gear to be wearing when you're going out in the bush.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess those tips are really important, and that would include things like layers, you know, having layers of clothes you can take on and off very easily. Certainly. Lightweight but good protection.
Lightweight clothing is good. I mean, and all of this sort of thing has improved immensely in the last few years. I mean, clothing now can be folded up into very small areas, whereas before it could be quite bulky.
Well, I think that's one of the things I've noticed from years ago. You know, go off in a four-wheel drive, and you know, my partner's always been a cyclist and walker, as with her mum and stepfather. So the idea is very much, you know, get the right clothing, pay a bit extra because you will get that lightweight with the protection with everything else you need. So it's very important.
Yep, certainly.
Okay,
I'd recommend it. It's worth, generally speaking, spending a bit more. Essentially, you get what you pay for.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's the thing, I think. You get what you pay for. So it's a good point. Now, let's direct people across to the website. Now, it's www.croydonbushwalking.info.
That's correct.
And what are people going to find when they jump onto that site?
Well, they'll find a number of things. They'll find, first of all, brief description of the club. Obviously, we don't want to fill the website up and distract them. We'll also find a link to our walking page, and on that walking page we have put up walks that we have done amongst the rambles and the day and adventure walks. In other words, the ones that run from, say, 7-8K upwards. And we put up with that maps of the walk, so people can actually see the tracks that we followed. There will also be a profile of the walk itself, so you can look at the profile and see whether it looks something that you might be interested in doing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes one of the things you need to be a little careful about it, looking at these things, depending on what you're looking on a phone screen, for example, because of the compression, it's all compressed, and hills look much steeper than they often are. Whereas if it's spread out a bit on a computer screen, you'll get a more realistic appreciation.
So in other words, you don't look at it and go, oh, my gosh, I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, what they're seeing and interpreting is going to be different to what you'd be wanting.
You will have a scale there, so you can look at it. But if you don't look at the scale, you may be scared off by just looking at the profile itself.
Well, one of the other points, and we'll touch on this briefly, is we talked about good old-fashioned paper mapping.
Yes.
You know, and you were saying you run mapping courses to help people understand.
We have run mapping courses to introduce people to how to navigate and read the maps that we produce for them. Mm-hmm. And we've never had any problem getting people to attend when we suggested we'd like to do it. We've also run a first aid course for people. We had a lot of support for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to do the same thing again. For newer members who maybe haven't had a chance to do anything like that.
Yeah, well, I'm an advocate for every person in every household having some form of first aid training.
Yes, indeed.
I think it's important, and, you know, you don't have to get it perfect, but, geez, if everybody had some, it just might help a whole lot of people.
It could do, indeed, yes. Yeah, I mean, we've been very lucky over the years not to have needed emergency treatment, but that doesn't mean to say it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the thing. And, of course, people can have heart attacks and people can have breakages and all that sort of stuff at any age and not just necessarily older.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you said, you slipped, cut your hand and you needed to get stitches. Well, you know, you needed to know how to stop bleeding and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's a great idea to be able to do that.
Yes, I have heard of walking groups where people have literally dropped dead on the track from a heart attack.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do?
Run around, you waving your hands in the air, screaming, going, ah!
Do you just walk away and leave them there, or what do you do? Well, no, obviously you can't do that.
No.
So you've got to be prepared to maybe abort the walk at this point.
And deal with that in an emergency.
Turn around and go and get help or so on, depending.
Yeah. That's it.
Which can be hard if you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, look, we're getting up to end of the show. It's nearly 4 o'clock, and I'd like to say thank you again, Quentin, for coming in. It's been a very interesting chat. I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've really enjoyed being here and being able to put forward some of the ideas and some of the things that we do and hopefully encourage people to get out and about.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about. That's and that's what the show is all about, getting out and about.
Get out and about, enjoy yourselves, and use it. Don't lose it.
Exactly. Walk. Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, this is Ant-Man and Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 show. We're going to be winding up the show. So have a fantastic week, everyone. We'll see you next Thursday. And I'm not even sure who my guest is next week, so we'll work that out and we'll let you know. And check out Ant-Man's RV and 4x4 page on Facebook. And we'll talk to you soon. Ciao.